The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome to a Wednesday, everybody. I am Nicole Sandler, coming to you live from NicoleSandler.com. That's where the show is based. And should you ever, you know, get to 5 o'clock Eastern, 2 Pacific on a weekday, and we're not being heard in the usual places, you can always go to NicoleSandler.com. You click on the Listen Live page, and there are links to the various streams, to the Progressive Voices Network, which at ProgressiveVoices.com, to my stream at NicoleSandler.com, which you can also always get at NicoleSandlerStream.com. If all else fails, you can always just get the simple audio stream there, and links to our video streams. These days, we are on Facebook Live, we are on Twitter, and we are on Twitch. We are still suspended from YouTube for a ridiculous reason that, you know, I've already spoken about. I'm sure I'll rant about in days to come before our suspension ends, the end of June. Ridiculous. But that's, again, that's a story for another day. Today, let me tell you what's going on. I seem to dwell on this theme, but we live in opposite world. I mean, we go along, you and I, we're relatively sane. I'm not saying that all my marbles are where they should be. You know, like anybody else, I have my issues, as we all do. But We, I mean progressives, Democrats, we're painted by the right as crazy people, but we know that they are guilty of projection. This is what they do. They take what they do and push it off on us. I just heard the craziest thing. In fact, let me play this for you while I still have it here and I'm thinking about it. I pulled the video. Yes. Okay. So Orange County, California. Oh, shoot. This won't work there. All right. I'm going to play it from the website. Hold on one second. I just got to get it. I got to get it up, as they say. All right. So Orange County, California is not my favorite place. You know, as somebody who lived in Los Angeles and a very liberal person, we always used to joke about you go into Orange County and things behind the orange curtain are not quite so Democratic friendly. It's kind of conservative down there. But I didn't realize they were just really stupid, too. And I bring this up because there is a hearing. The Orange County Board of Supervisors is having a hearing, I guess, about the vaccines. And I want you to hear what one of the supervisors said. And I can't make this stuff up. It is real. I just saw this moments before coming on the air, so it's fresh in my mind. You're ready for this? All right, let's go to the videotape.
It's only at the patient's request.
That's correct.
Does it? Is there any intention of tracking folks?
No. Donald Wagner, supervisor, 3rd District.
Is there any in the vaccine? We heard about an injection of a tracking device. Is that being done anywhere? In Orange County?
The witness is laughing.
I just have to compose myself. There's not a vaccine with a tracking device embedded in it that I know of exists in the world. Period.
Okay. Now, the idiocy is just astounding. This was yesterday at 11:50 a.m. Pacific time, Orange County, California. Donald P. Wagner, supervisor, 3rd District. Hey, Orange County, California people, seriously? You know, you guys need to turn off the Fox because they're doing that. This is your brain on Fox. You remember the old commercials, is your brain on drugs? This is your brain on Fox. These people are demented. They are nuts. The kind of shit that they're spewing is frankly embarrassing. And they're spawning all of these crazy fucking people around the country. So I read a story the other day, you know, I'm in South Florida, or Florida, as I like to call it. And I see a story about a school called Centner Academy. And at first, my heart skipped a beat because I thought it said Center Academy, because that's the name of a school that my kid went to in ninth grade for half of the year. Thankfully, it's not the same place. The one she went to was, well, a little bit better than this. So Centner Academy apparently told its parents that told staff and teachers that nobody is allowed to be vaccinated. If you do get vaccinated, they do not want you to have contact with the children because they're afraid that the kids can catch something from a vaccinated adult. This is a school, a private school that has pre-K. It goes pre-K through eighth grade. I tried calling there and the phone just rings. It doesn't go to voicemail. Nobody answers. I wonder why. But anyway, I was able to pull up their website, Centner, C-E-N-T-N-E-R, academy.com, and look at their 2021 to 2022 tuition and fees. Part-time pre-K 2 is, well, it's only a very reasonable $15,160 a year. Preschool, I guess this is full-time preschool, pre-K 2 to pre-K 4, $22,475 a year. Okay, then kindergarten to fifth grade. Well, now you're an actual school, so there it's a little bit higher, $24,500 a year. And for sixth through eighth grade, $29,850 a year. But wait, there's more. The matriculation fee, what, is $2,200. The technology fee is $250. The computer fee is $350. And the smart tuition fee, I guess as opposed to the dumb tuition fee, it's $50. Oh, and there's also a $200 application fee. Tuition insurance and protection is not included. Monthly payment plans incur a $100 a month surcharge, and lunch is billed separately at $230 a month. And by the way, they will not allow any teachers or staff to be vaccinated because they believe that being vaccinated poses some kind of a threat to the children in the school who they and it goes back to they actually have a vaccine policy. Here's their vaccine policy. At Centner Academy, we value individuality and honor freedom of choice. We are proud that our happiness school does not mandate vaccines of any kind, and we accept religious exemptions. Oh my God. So this is in Miami, Miami proper. There's the preschool campus and the elementary and middle school campus. I'd call them, but I'll try again. I tried calling a little while ago, and again, there was no answer, but I'll try again. What the hell? Because I really
Thank
want
you
it.
For calling okay. Centner Academy.
They're going to ask
you. For the preschool
you.
Campus, press 1. For the elementary and middle school
two.
Campus.
All right, we want 2. I press 2. Let's see if anybody answers. Because I would really like to talk to somebody. But when I called earlier to see if it would go through, if they even answered the phone, it just, the message repeats.
Centner Academy.
Oh, somebody answered. Hi, my name's Nicole Sandler. I do a radio show, and I'm curious about your vaccine policy.
Okay, I'm sorry, what was your name again?
Nicole Sandler. I'm on the air. It's an internet radio show. And so I wanted to...
I'm sorry, you're calling the main line. Can I go ahead and have get your information and I can have someone contact you?
Oh, well, see, I'm on the air now, so I'm trying to get an answer about your vaccine policy.
Okay, I apologize. You're calling our school phone in order for us to go ahead and speak to parents that need to pick up their students.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Yes. And there's not another number I can call?
I can take your name and information and just have someone contact you.
You know what? I'll call back another time. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Uh-huh. Bye. Bye. Oh, well, at least they answered. Okay. So I guess they're still doing business. Who would send their kid there? Would you? I guess maybe the Orange County supervisor, except he's in California. Or, you know, maybe they're Joe Rogan listeners. Joe Rogan, who I guess does a popular podcast, who, you know, not a doctor, not a scientist, as far as I can tell, but he goes on the air to his millions of listeners. And apparently, yes, he has millions of listeners, I suppose, and tells them, well, if you're young and healthy and you work out, you don't need to get the vaccine. Excuse me. What? This is the problem. This is where we are in the 21st century in the United States of America. People who have no bona fides, who have no scientific expertise, no education, tell you what to do with your body and how to fight this global pandemic that's already killed almost 600,000 people in this country alone? What is wrong with people? If I need medical advice, I certainly don't go to my accountant or to the guy at the gym. I go to a doctor. If I have a scientific question, I go to a scientist. This is indicative of where, I hate to say it, but where the last 4 years has gotten us. And I won't place all the blame on the last 4 years, but it's certainly a lot of it comes from there, where you had idiots who didn't know what the hell they were doing. We had people, laymen in the Trump administration, celebrating that they got the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, to change their verbiage and their guidance into use their language rather than what the medical experts say. I just don't get it. I just do not get it. So there's stuff going on today. By the way, I'm looking at everything that's going on and realizing that if somebody high enough up in government wants to do something to you, they can. We as citizens have no recourse. And this was brought back to me in a big way when I got an email from Don Siegelman. Now, if you've listened to this show for any amount of time, you're familiar with the name. And if you've been involved in progressive politics for any amount of time, you should know the name. Don Siegelman, he was governor of Alabama from 1999 to 2003. He was a progressive. He was just a rising star in the Democratic Party. There was talk that if he were to win re-election as governor for a second term in Alabama, that he could be a potential presidential candidate, and he would have been great. You know, a Southern progressive would be awesome. And then, well, Karl Rove went after him, and Don Siegelman wound up railroaded. He wound up in prison. He wound up no longer governor. He wound up in solitary confinement. He served a long time in prison, and he finally served out his sentence. Nobody came to his rescue, not the party who knew who he was. He wound up serving years in jail, and then he was under supervision when he was finally released. He just finally got rid of that, and now he wrote a book. We had him on last year when the book came out, called Stealing Our Democracy: How the Political Assassination of a Governor Threatens Our Nation. And now he finished doing the audiobook, reading the entire thing, so it's in his voice. And Don Siegelman has an open invitation on this show anytime, and actually it's good timing, because I want to get his take on what is going on. And for example, who is worse, who is more of a pardon the term, but it is an actual political term, rat fucker? Who's the biggest rat fucker? Was it Karl Rove, or is it Roger Stone? And again, rat fucking has been around for a long time. In fact, I think they said Donald Segretti back in the Nixon years was the original rat fucker. Wikipedia says rat fucking is an American slang term for political sabotage or dirty tricks, particularly pertaining to elections. The thing that makes the Trump people so horrible is they are rat fucking on steroids, because this is the projection rat fucking. They did all the dirty tricks. They tried to steal the election, and they turn around and accused our side of doing what they did. It's almost too complicated. It's enough to make your head explode. So it'll be interesting to get Don Siegelman's take on that and find out who he thinks might be worse. if it is Karl Rove who went after him, who got him good, tell you that, or someone like Roger Stone and the rest of the cabal that surrounds the former guy. Speaking of part of the cabal that surrounds the former guy, it's great timing because today, yes, this morning, the feds raided Rudolph Giuliani's Upper East Side New York City apartment and his office building on Park Avenue. I love this. Hakeem Jeffries, who is trying to position himself to succeed Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House, I'll reserve judgment on that. Well, I know where I stand, but we'll go into that another day because I don't have time today. But Hakeem Jeffries tweeted, quote, "It's official. Rudy Giuliani is now under federal criminal investigation." Yeah. So here's the story. Rudy's apartment on the Upper East Side and Park Avenue office building were both searched by the feds. They took electronic devices. At the crux of the probe, investigators have been trying to figure out whether Giuliani lobbied Trump illegally for favors for Ukrainian oligarchs who were helping him sniff out Biden controversies. One of the key questions has been whether he was paid for trying to persuade Trump to oust U.S. Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch. We remember Marie Yovanovitch. She was one of the heroes of the impeachment. Her testimony was jaw-dropping. It was just great. And, you know, Donald Trump was always threatened by any strong woman, anybody who'd stand up to her. Well, there's more. Let me tell you more. Harry Littman tweeted out, "Hold the phone. FBI now at Victoria Tensing's house." Oh, now, Victoria Tensing, it's a lawyer, wife, and partner of Joseph DeGeneva. Same circles as Rudy and Trump. This has the hallmarks of a bigger day at DOJ. And she's probably not expecting it, unlike Rudy. So not only did they raid Rudy Giuliani's apartment and office, but Victoria Tensing and Joseph DeGeneva, remember, they were going to join his defense team. And then, like, the next day said, no, we're not. And I don't know what that was about, whether it was just they didn't want to lose their lucrative Fox contributor jobs, because they get money for that. And they probably knew that Donald Trump is a notorious shirker. In other words, he doesn't pay his bills. So I don't know. But there's a lot going on here. And yes, so this is good. This is good news about something that a judge did. Obviously, a judge cleared the way for these raids to be carried out. And they've got Rudy's phones and computers. And all right. So while that's going on, hoping to get to some bit of justice, another judge made a ruling, this one in North Carolina. This one I'm not so happy about. Superior Court Judge Jeff Foster today issued a decision to not publicly release the body cam footage of the fatal April 21st shooting when cops in Elizabeth City, North Carolina, shot and killed Andrew Brown Jr. Remember, it was it just yesterday? His family was supposed to see the video. They go to the courthouse or to the police station or wherever it was they were supposed to see it. And they were told, wait, we're not ready for you yet. We have to redact some of the footage, which is nonsense, because this is not the media. This is not the public. This is the family of the man they killed. And so they had to wait. So when they finally waited, they were finally brought in and shown 20 seconds of video. 20 seconds. When the video started, shots had already been fired. So the shooting was in progress. they didn't have any context. They didn't get to see what precipitated it. They didn't get to see what happened before the shots were fired. They were shown 20 seconds. And even at the 20 seconds, they said what they witnessed in that 20 seconds was an execution. Now the judge says, no, no video for you. We are not going to show you what's on this video. I'm sorry. That's just flat out wrong. So now I'm hearing, well, we may get to see it. Let me see if I can't find this other story that I was just looking at. No, I can't find it. We may get to see it after 30 days. But they're saying, the judge said, his decision not to release this footage was based on, I can't make this up, was based on the footage potentially affecting a fair trial, if there was to be one, and possibly jeopardizing the safety of the deputies in question. Now, remember, there were like seven cops, and I don't have the exact information in front of me, but there were like seven officers suspended. A few were fired. There's stuff going on here. And for them to say nobody is seeing this video, I think what is on that tape is devastating. And by not showing it to us, you know, what we can conjure up in our imaginations, what we think happened is going to be worse than what did happen. Maybe. Or maybe not. Maybe it's just so horrific that I certainly don't want to see it, but we need to see this stuff. And I'll tell you something. This story comes out, and then I see this one, and I wasn't even looking for it. But let me show you this. Today, April 28th. Daily Beast, 1:52 p.m. Eastern Time. Body cam footage shows fatal Chicago shooting of Anthony Alvarez. This is never ending. A police watchdog agency in Chicago released chilling footage today of a cop fatally shooting 22-year-old Anthony Alvarez from behind, a March 31st incident that took place less than 48 hours after the fatal police shooting of 13-year-old Adam Toledo. In body cam footage from the officer who fired the fatal shots, we see him run past another officer in pursuit of Alvarez, who appears to have been holding an object that looked like a gun. The cop says, "Hey, drop the gun, drop the gun," as he comes up close behind this 22-year-old kid. I'm sorry, a 22, he's a kid. The officer then quickly fires several shots at Alvarado as he fled. Alvarado then is hit. He's moaning in pain. He says, "Why are you shooting me?" The cop says, "You had a gun." And I haven't seen that footage either, but according to this Daily Beast article, it says there's no indication from the footage that Alvarado pointed the weapon at the officer. It says, In what is presumably a security camera at a nearby home, footage from that, Alvarez does appear to be holding something shaped like a gun. The object falls to the ground after the incident, and the officers on scene repeatedly express concern about keeping tabs on it, even as they attempt to render aid to Alvarez. I guess they rendered aid. Well, that's a difference. Should we be happy about that? I don't know what the answer is. I do know that there is legislation out there for police reform, and something's got to be done. Oh, and by the way, there's more. Here's another one. Police released footage of the events leading to the death of Mario Gonzalez, a 26-year-old Latino man in Alameda, California, showing officers kneeling on the man's back and shoulder until he became unresponsive. The video contradicts the official's original account of the confrontation. Three officers involved have been placed on administrative leave. I mean, it's just the never-ending story. I don't know what it's going to take until these cops stop doing this. Take their guns away. If a cop is on traffic stop duty, he doesn't need to be armed, or she. I'm just disgusted. Then there's a follow-up to the story I told you about on Monday. Karen Garner, the 73-year-old woman who was tackled to the ground by Loveland, Colorado police. and this was horrific. I played the video. This frail 80-pound woman was tackled to the ground by this cop. Later on, you see him in the squad room playing back the video and laughing, saying, "There's the pop." And he laughed about it. He said that was her shoulder. He also fractured her arm. And now her family is speaking out. She's got a daughter, a daughter-in-law, and a granddaughter. And they're all saying she has not come back. She's now living in an assisted living facility, and she is anxious and scared, and it's not the woman that they know and love. This is just disgusting. Something's got to give. All right, enough of that. I see that Don Siegelman is in the Zoom room, so we're going to talk with him in just a moment. But we're also waiting for it's not the State of the Union address. It is Joe Biden's first joint address to a joint session of Congress. It would be the State of the Union address if this wasn't his first year in office. But because usually it's delivered earlier, it's like in February or maybe March, but usually late February. And by that time, I guess they figure that the incoming president hasn't been on the job long enough to actually do a State of the Union address. So it's an address to a joint session of Congress. Well, this year it was delayed for a number of reasons. One is, of course, well, COVID. Everything is COVID related. But the other is because, this speech will be delivered tonight from the same room where insurrectionists broke into Congress and, you know, wanted to kill Nancy Pelosi and hang Mike Pence. And this is the first time that they're doing a big event in the Capitol again. And I'm sure there was a lot of trepidation surrounding that. And I'm sure they took great security measures. And now we know that there will be a maximum of 200 people in the room as opposed to being a packed room. So it's going to be a different kind of speech than we're used to, aside from the fact that it's not actually a State of the Union address. But Joe Biden's also going to be delivering his newest plan. And it is it's the second part of his infrastructure proposal. This is the what are they calling this one? The American, oh God, I don't even know. Hold on, I've got it right here. Let's see. It is the I got to scroll up to the top of the PDF. This is like a 15-page document. The American Families Plan. It's all related. And I guess, you know, if he had to split them up into jobs, infrastructure, families, that's okay. I think it was the rescue plan, the jobs plan, and now the American Families Plan. So there's a lot of details there. Maybe we'll get into it, maybe not. But I see our guest is here. And let me get our shot set up. And I want to bring Don Siegelman in, of course, because he is our guest today. So I will say hello, Governor, and welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be back. And what a great day to be back. It's the last time we talked, the future of the country was not quite as clear or as bright as it is today. But thank goodness we have made a change, and there's a new president and a new direction for this country. I'm really so proud of where the Biden administration is going.
As am I. And Governor, to be honest with you, I was not that excited about a Biden candidacy. And I was even more worried about a Biden presidency. I didn't think he could win. And I certainly didn't expect the progressiveness we're seeing from him. I've said it a few times and I'll say it again. I've never been so happy to have been so wrong. At least so far, knocking on wood laminate. You're a progressive, so are you surprised at the direction the Biden administration is moving?
Well, let me say this: as you, I am pleased. I think new presidents have a choice. They can either start looking toward the next election and choose a moderate and cautious path forwards, mm-hmm. not so they don't really take chances, don't rock the boat, don't offend too many people. Or as Joe Biden has chosen, one to go all out, recognizing that, you know, he knows he has 4 years and that's all he knows. He may not even have 4 years, but he knows he was elected for a 4-year term, and there's no guarantee that a re-election is in the future. So he has decided to make change, and he's putting people in place who he's appointed people who also want change. And as a result, we are seeing the fulfillment of his campaign promises. I am delighted and encouraged.
Yes, it's a good thing. And it seems like, you know, he's listening to the people that brung him there, as it were. I was worried that, you know, Bernie Sanders was going to give up the power base that he had. And look, he has had a huge following, and he brought a lot to the party, to the election. Without Bernie Sanders supporters, Joe Biden couldn't have won. But it seems, and I was afraid that he was going to sort of, you know, push him off to the side and say, get out of here, kid, you bother me. But he didn't. It seems like he's really taking a lot of what Bernie is suggesting to heart, except, you know, of course, there are going to be things. So we notice in this new American Families Plan, Bernie's suggestion that in terms of health care, that they lower the age, Medicare eligibility age, I think, to 60 or 55, a few other things. Those suggestions were not taken. Instead, what they do is they basically shore up the Affordable Care Act and make the addition to the subsidies last longer, which is one of the things they did in the American Rescue Plan. And I know that it's true because my insurance is from the exchange. It's through healthcare.gov. And after that legislation went through, I said, well, let me go in and see if I can get some help on my premium. And sure enough, my premiums came down about $100 a month. So the help is there. And this plan now makes that, extends it further to give more people help, and I guess to get more to insure another 4 million people. So at least it's going in the right direction.
Well, it is going in the right direction. It needs to go further. Yes. in the left direction, in that, you know, no one should go to bed hungry or homeless or without health care, and we still have a long way to go. I am pleased that the Biden administration has picked up on Bernie and Elizabeth Warren's call for, universal pre-K, early Yes. learning for all kids, and that everyone should go to college, and we should forgive student loans, that we should reform our tax system, and we should, raise the minimum wage and create new jobs. So, lots is going on, and Joe Biden has chosen a path of change and clearly understands that this is his moment in history. If he's going to give back to the working families of America, now is the time.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Now, there's still a long ways to go. And you mentioned the education. This new plan that he's going to really introduce tonight in the speech calls for, it says, 4 more years of education, of free education. It's 2 years of preschool and then 2 years of community college. But they're also talking about more money for Pell Grants and more grants to historically black colleges and universities and other schools that cater to low income people and minorities. And so it's really, you know, finally, I feel like we have an administration who's looking out for the little guy, which we haven't had in a while, frankly. So
that, yeah. No, you're absolutely right. It is crystal clear that President Biden has placed at the top of his agenda the working families of America, which includes an understanding that parents want the best for their children. To get there, they've got to have pre-K. They've got to have some promise of higher education. We've got to have tax reform, higher minimum wage, better jobs, and he's moving in all of those directions. You know, the other thing that we haven't mentioned is his push for toward an understanding of the climate crisis
Yes.
that we face. And He jumped out of the box with that
right.
and headed in the right direction. So more applause.
Yes, we talked about that yesterday here on the show, that he convened this climate summit with 40 world leaders via Zoom, but is committed to doing something, which, you know, after coming off of 4 years of a guy trying to reverse the course on any progress we made, is refreshing, but he wants to take it even further. So I'm thrilled about all that. But here we are today, Don Siegelman, talking. And whenever I think of your story, I get angry. I get so angry. And I'm looking at it today. I'm thinking about you and what was done to you. For those who don't know, and I think most of my listeners are familiar with your story, Don Siegelman was a rising progressive star in the Democratic Party. In 2002... You were coming to the end of the first term as governor of Alabama. You had already been attorney general, secretary of state, lieutenant governor, and governor, the only person to have held all four of those offices in Alabama. You were running for re-election, and you were considered to be a great prospect for the Democratic presidential nomination going forward. You're the guy. I mean, to win in Alabama, and I don't think there's been a Democrat who's won state office since you left. I could be wrong, but I don't think. Doug Jones.
That's true.
Right. And then they went after you. You were targeted. You know, if you want to tell the Reader's Digest version of the story for those who may not know what was done to you.
I can do it in a nutshell. I was targeted from the Bush White House. I was getting ready to launch a campaign against George W. Bush. Karl Rove and his second lieutenant, a woman named Kitty McCullough, came to Alabama, stayed here throughout the campaign. She was the one who was given credit by the state Republican Party for, quote, finding the votes necessary to swing the election to my opponent. The election was illegally certified by Karl Rove's client, the state attorney general. There was an influx of some $20 million from the Indian casinos in Mississippi by way of Jack Abramoff and Ralph Reed, two of Karl Rove's college buddies. Karl Rove's fingerprints were all over the case. Yep. We have sworn testimony that he was involved and had asked the Department of Justice to pursue me. I was brought to trial 30 days before my reelection by the wife, who is a U.S. attorney, whose husband was running my opponent's campaign. The U.S. attorney's husband was running my opponent's campaign. I was brought to trial 30 days before my reelection in 2006. So that's the thumbnail sketch. My book, I'm excited about this, Nicole. I'm not talking about
you the hard copy. You did the audio version, right?
Yeah, I just finished the audio version. The reason why it took me so long is because I wanted listeners to hear it in my voice, not a hired gun from Amazon.
Right.
And so I'm really excited about that.
So it is now available like through Audible and the other places where you get audiobooks. So it is called Stealing Our Democracy, How the Political Assassination of a Governor Threatens Our Nation. The original print copy, I devoured in about a day and a half and I couldn't put it down. And it so upset me. And I go back and I think about what was done to you and how long you spent in prison. How long were you in prison?
I was sentenced to 88 months. I've ultimately served right at 5 years. I came out with a PhD in criminal justice reform. Let me say this before our time runs out. Mm-hmm. I am pleased that we're moving forward with this George Floyd Act of the justice reform. But the way to fix this, we've got to allow a lawyer for the families of victims of excessive use of force by police, a lawyer to be in the grand jury as a check on truth, because prosecutors at present can knowingly and willingly present false evidence or testimony or withhold exculpatory evidence. There is no guarantee that in any grand jury where a policeman is the target of the grand jury, that the prosecutor is going to present body cam video, for example. They don't have to present the evidence. They can present whatever evidence they want. So we need a lawyer for the family in the grand jury.
You know, that's a great point, because we have learned after the fact that the grand jury who heard the case about the murder of Breonna Taylor in Louisville, Kentucky, they were never presented with any prosecutorial information about the cops who actually killed her. The only ones they heard any evidence about was the cop who fired a bullet into the apartment next door, and there was a charge filed there for like reckless endangerment or something, but nothing about the cops who killed Breonna Taylor. And then then later we found out because they were never even presented anything to bring them up on charges. So if Breonna Taylor's family had a representative in the room, this would have, that couldn't have happened. Is that what you're saying?
That would have been brought to light. Let me mention one other thing that most of your listeners are probably not going to know. And that is that in grand juries, no one questions who the grand jurors are. They can all, for example, they could all have been related to members of the police department in Breonna Taylor's case. So they could have been members of the Ku Klux Klan, for that matter. No one voir dires like they do in a civil or criminal trial, the jurors, to make sure that they are racially balanced or that they're not prejudiced in some way or another.
Wow. Oh, I did not know that. So thank you for letting us know. So, yes, there are so many things that need to be fixed. And, you know, obviously right now we're talking about it seems like an epidemic where people of color, mostly black men, but women, and in some cases, like we just saw a video of a 73-year-old, 80-pound white woman who was brutalized by police in Loveland, Colorado. The police need to, I think they all need to be fired, trained, and rehired, the ones who are worthy of the job. I think too many of them are, they're high on the power or something that they have given, they've been given authority that they do have not earned and they don't deserve.
Well, we've got to have better policing, better policies, better laws, and we've got to elect politicians who care and want to make a difference. And I think we have in Joe Biden. You know, I think that people were, after Trump, were looking for someone who was both civil and couth, who was a role model for our kids, someone who respected the rights of women, someone who understood the importance of a free press, someone who had a sense of history, and someone who was going to pursue justice. And that was equal justice, social justice, racial justice, environmental justice, and criminal justice reform. And I think we've got that now in Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
I think so, too. And I think we're on the right track. I'm happy with it. But I still, you know, I was heartened to see today that feds went in to raid Rudy Giuliani's apartment and place of business. And they also went to Victoria Tensing and Joe DeGeneva's apartment, too. So they're not letting the crimes of the Trump administration just go. Obviously, there's an active investigation there. I have to ask you the question because it was one that I posed earlier as I was thinking about the story. And there's a term, pardon my French, but a term called rat fucking, which is known as political dirty tricks. Obviously, Karl Rove was guilty of that. He was the big one during the Bush administration. Who's the bigger one? Is it Karl Rove or is it like Roger Stone and Steve Bannon and Rudy Giuliani and the people Trump surrounded himself with?
Well, I think, Nicole, what has happened, because we did not hold Karl Rove accountable, his clones who were put in place were inspired by the fact that he was able, you know, he started out with Richard Nixon in the dirty tricks department of Don Segretti.
That's right.
And
Donald
Karl
Segretti.
Rove, I wouldn't, you know, Karl Rove was involved through Ralph Reed and Grover Norquist in the demise of Gray Davis. And I wouldn't be surprised if his fingerprints aren't on the current recall of Gavin Newsom.
Wow. I wouldn't be surprised either. This stuff goes on. And you're right. The fact that nothing was done about this is also what angers me. The fact that they could do this to you, a very popular sitting governor in a southern state. Nobody came to your rescue. Nobody from the party said, wait a minute, they targeted this guy. What he did, first of all, the thing that they got you on was a contribution for a state lottery, which I understand now, what, 22 years later or something, or almost 20 years later, is just passed the Alabama Senate again, and they're waiting for the House to pass it. Is that where they are now on a new lottery?
The contribution that they alleged that was a bribe was from a man who served on a non-paying board. I was the fourth governor in a row to appoint the guy to the same board he had served on.
He didn't want
years.
It. He didn't want the job again, right?
Now, there was no allegation that I benefited by a single penny. In fact, nope. I have the distinction, according to the 11th Circuit, of being the only person, public official, ever sent to prison under these circumstances. But be that as it may, you know, we've got to change our justice system to protect the innocent and to hold the guilty accountable.
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to playing my role. Oh, by the way, I got my law license returned. They voted, the Bar Association voted unanimously to return to give me my license back. So this week I was able to put that in my desk drawer. So that's another step in the right direction.
Well, you know, I'm glad because it should have been done years ago. It should have never been taken away. But there's that old adage, too little, too late. I'm really angry at this party for not coming to your rescue. If you can be allowed to languish in jail for 5 years for not committing a crime, just being a target of Karl Rove and the Republicans, they did open the door for Donald Trump to let Roger Stone keep doing his dirty tricks, to let Steve Bannon and the rest of them.
Stephen Miller.
Oh, my God. These just horrible, sorry excuses for human beings to perpetrate their ill will on our nation. And I'm angry at Barack Obama that he left office and didn't pardon you. Have you ever spoken to anybody about that?
It was, the other thing, the other piece of this is that 113 former state attorneys general from around the country, lots of them Republicans, lots of them Democrats, wrote to President Obama and called on him to issue a pardon. But anyway, nothing was done, and I am out. I'm pushing for criminal justice reform, starting with straightening out and holding police accountable for their excessive use of force against blacks in this country. It's just got to come to an end.
It does. I see that you don't want to go there. I'll do it when you're not on the air with me, because I'm angry about it. And there was no excuse for that. I'm sorry. And if I ever get the chance to interview Barack Obama, you know that's going to be one of my first questions, because it's built up in me for years. It just. But so, Don Siegelman, have you had any contact with the Biden administration?
I saw President Biden when he was at the 16th Street Baptist Church, the African-American church that was bombed, where four young girls were killed shortly after George Wallace raised the Confederate battle flag over the Capitol in 1963. But anyway, I had a chance to speak with him personally there, and I have been in touch with a couple of the folks in his policy office. And I tell you that he's got some very good, sharp, caring, committed people working for him. So I'm proud of the quality and commitment of the people that he has on his staff.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. And I agree. He's as opposed to the former guy who said only the best people, Biden's actually surrounding himself with mostly good people. There are a few I take an exception to, but hey, nobody is going to be 100% in lockstep with me. So I understand that. I'm willing to compromise on certain things. But you mentioned you are now working in criminal justice reform. Are you doing anything in the state of Alabama? Let me go back. Why are you still in Alabama?
Well, my dog is here, and my wife. So I'm here. I've got two dogs now. We just got a little chocolate lab female puppy. So this is home for the moment. But I've been working quietly behind the scenes in this deep red Republican state, trying to impact criminal justice reform. And there are some Republicans who are also at work trying to do the same thing. So I am cautiously optimistic that some good things hopefully will happen.
Well, I hope so. And I'm glad you have your law license again. Would you ever go back to practicing? I mean, you've had a nice big gap in there. But it's not like you ever stopped doing the research and the work.
Well, what I hope to do is have an impact on justice by as soon as possible, volunteering to work with other lawyers on jury selection or on criminal defense issues where I feel that the state or the United States has gone in the wrong direction. So, you know, I hope to leave an imprint there. And again, the key for me right now is, you know, having gone through all this, that if one is to find a purpose, or if there's a purpose in everything, or if one is to find a purpose in everything that happens, then I think my purpose now is to impact criminal justice reform. And so that's why I'm in touch with the Biden administration. And I'm trying to make my way into the this new George Floyd Act, because I think there's some, it's a good step, but there's some gaps there as well.
What do they need? What is the answer? What do we do about this seeming epidemic of police violence against mostly black men, but not only black men? It's a power trip, I think. What do you do about it? How do you fix this?
Well, I think, again, Nicole, I think it starts by holding police accountable. And I think you do that by repealing the immunity given to prosecutors in the and investigators in the Federal Tort Claims Act. In 1976, the Supreme Court, in something called the Embler case, gave prosecutors unlimited protection from civil liability. Mm-hmm. So that they can present false evidence, testimony, or withhold exculpatory evidence in order to get an indictment or a conviction. I think President Biden should step forward, one, and repudiate that in an executive order, and secondly, tell his attorney general that while at present prosecutors and investigators may not be sued civilly for doing those kinds of willful withholding the exculpatory evidence or presenting false evidence, if they are found to have done so, they will be fired.
Right.
So I think they need to make it clear to the FBI and other agents and to prosecutors that if they misbehave and think they can get away with framing an innocent citizen through false testimony or evidence, they're going to be fired. So there are some things that President Biden can do through an executive order that'll make a difference.
Right. But one thing that we've discovered that we kind of knew, but now we're seeing it in black and white, is how these officers, these offending officers, lie. They lie on the police report. In the case of George Floyd, we saw the press release they issued about he had a medical incident and then later died at the hospital. Not a word about, you know, holding him down in the knee on the neck or any of that stuff, which we would never have known about if not for that brave young woman who videotaped it. By the same token, and this is a totally separate and different thing, I just passed the 10-year anniversary of my arrest at a town hall meeting for trying to ask my then congressman a question. And the only reason I bring this up is because that officer lied on my arrest report as well. He said that I got physical with him and that I pushed him. The truth is, and it's on videotape, he pushed me numerous times and I finally yelled at him. I said, get your hands off me. That's when he put me under arrest. But they lie with such impunity, and it seems like it's just common procedure. They lie. They make up what they want to make up and put on the arrest report. How do we change that?
Well, if we're going, we've got to start by holding people accountable. We've got to repeal the immunity that the Supreme Court and Congress gave. We've got to have a lawyer present for the person who is charged in the grand jury as a check on truth, to object to evidence by the prosecution or to present evidence of their own, such as body cam video or other videos that the grand jurors would not see otherwise. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind that in many cases, prosecutors, police, and judges see themselves as playing on the same team. They see themselves as being part of the government's team.
Wow.
So prosecutors frequently cover for police. And
right.
That's why, you know, we have seen tragically that the deaths of blacks at the hands of excessive use of force by police is seemingly usual, happening all the time, holding them accountable, as was done with Derek Chauvin, is an anomaly.
Right.
So we've got to straighten that out. And the way to do that is through some of the ways that I just mentioned.
Gotcha. I want to ask you a bit about Alabama politics. Last year, the state did not reelect Doug Jones, who plays a part in your book. And if people get the audiobook, they'll hear. Doug Jones was just starting out, but was part of the story. He was the senator for one term, and now he was beaten by Tommy Tuberville. What the hell? What?
Yeah, we have gone from some great representatives who were in their own right, civil libertarians and who cared about people. They were somewhat constrained by voters, but they generally found a way, even during the 60s, to try to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And now we've got a buffoon in Congress, and we've got another one attempting to run who may be worse than Tommy Tuberville.
Right. But, so Mo Brooks is now going to run for Richard Shelby's seat, and we could wind up with Mo Brooks and Tommy Tuberville. Would you ever run for office again, Don Siegelman?
Well, given the makeup of the Alabama electorate, I was the last Democrat standing in Alabama, and probably and as you mentioned, the only one to have held all those four top offices. And so I'm happy with that. You never say never, but
right.
probably not.
Because it's a different world than it was 20 years ago, right? I mean,
it is very different.
In many ways, that's really sad. Do you have any contacts still in state government, or are you just kind of doing your own thing?
Well, I do have some Republican friends who are in, and I have, of course, Democratic friends and the members of the House and Senate. But I'm quietly trying to have an impact where I can. But it's difficult in this state, in this climate, and of course, with Donald Trump still on the loose, there's a lot of pandering to the public by some elected officials, and that makes it difficult to have the kind of impact on, for example, criminal justice reform in a deep red state like Alabama.
You know, the Republicans are meeting this week, I guess last weekend and into the week in Orlando, and there was another gathering somewhere else of the Republican Senatorial Committee or whatever. They're still pandering to Donald Trump. Do you think that the Republican Party is going to survive? Because the last thing I read, something said that there's, 25% of adults will self-identify as a Republican. Do you think they can survive this, especially now we see Giuliani and the other people being raided? Hopefully there's investigations going on and they will be held accountable for what they did to this country. Can the Republican Party survive this?
Well, I think they will survive. I'm not sure how they will emerge, and let's hope it's not, in the shape of a Trump.
Oh God!
So, but we've got when you've got people like Hawley and
Ted Cruz,
from Texas. Yep. And, and Brian Kemp from Georgia, and I mean they're exhibiting some horrible traits, and they're, again, I think it's all pandering to the Trump base, and but we have to hope that dissipates quickly.
Right. My only concern of the Republican Party not surviving is that more of them will come over to the Democratic Party and try to pull us further to the right, which is not what we need right now. They screwed up their own party. We don't need them screwing up ours. We're finally moving in the right direction. So Let them deal with their own mess. Don Siegelman, it's always great to hear from you, and you always have an open invitation here anytime. The book is available, and now the audiobook is out. Stealing Our Democracy, by Don Siegelman, read by Don Siegelman. So get it now. I mean, just hearing, I mean, I read the book and I hear your voice in it. Hearing you tell what happened, I'm sure is just another, adds another dimension to it. Thank you for sharing your story with us. And again, on behalf of the American people, I'm so sorry that this was allowed to happen to you. It shouldn't have. It's a travesty.
It's great to be with you and look forward to coming back sometime.
Me too. Anytime. Great to talk to you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Don't forget, tonight, Joe Biden makes his first address to a joint session of Congress. Not quite the State of the Union. It'll be a address of a different kind because everything is different. We'll see how it plays out. What's most important is what he says, and I think most people are going to be happy with it. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Tomorrow's Thursday. Howie Klein will be here, but we'll also run through the speech, so if you miss anything, I'll try to have the important parts for you. All right. As always, thank you for listening, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow. Keep the faith and get vaccinated. Bye.
Time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
President Joe Biden will mark the eve of his 100th day in office with his first address before a joint session of Congress, 9 p.m. Eastern, Wednesday night. For the first time ever, two women will sit behind the president, who will also for the first time say the words, Madam Vice President, as he begins his speech. The president will introduce the American Families Plan. That's a $1.8 trillion bundle of proposals that includes 4 more years of free education, universal preschool for 3- and 4-year-olds, and 2 years of free community college. It would also provide additional assistance to low-income students by increasing Pell Grants. It'll also provide direct support to children and families and extend the tax cuts under the American Rescue Plan that benefit lower and middle-income workers and families. There's a lot more. For instance, the American Families Plan will also extend the expanded health insurance tax credits. Those credits are providing premium relief that's lowering health insurance costs by an average of $50 per person per month for 9 million people. It'll also enable 4 million more uninsured people to gain coverage. The plan would also create a national comprehensive paid family and medical leave program. And will ensure workers get 3 days of bereavement leave per year, starting in year one. It'll also reform our broken unemployment insurance system. It would extend the child tax credit increase in the American Rescue Plan through 2025 and make the child tax credit permanently fully refundable. It is ambitious. It would be paid for by increasing the top tax rate and capital gains tax and by cracking down on IRS enforcement of tax evaders. Of course, President Biden will tout the great progress made in the last 100 days in the fight against COVID and for vaccinations, as well as the ARP, and oh yeah, checks in the mail. Only 200 invited guests will be in attendance due to COVID restrictions. Republican Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina will deliver the Republican response, and Jamal Bowman, the freshman congressman from New York, will deliver a progressive response as well. Democratic Congresswoman Ilhan Omar is reintroducing 3 policing bills she hopes will end up in the bipartisan package that lawmakers have been fine-tuning for weeks as pressure mounts to pass meaningful police reform legislation. The most significant of these bills would establish an independent federal agency to investigate deaths in police custody, officer-involved shootings, and use of force that results in severe bodily injury. Meanwhile, incidents of non-lethal use of force are getting more attention, like in a federal civil lawsuit filed against 4 officers in North Carolina, alleging that they grabbed a black woman by her hair and pulled her out of her SUV during a 2019 traffic stop in New Jersey. 2 officers are facing civil rights charges for allegedly assaulting an Arab teenager and then lying about that on a police report. And on it goes. On Tuesday, the FBI confirmed that it was launching a civil rights investigation into the killing of Andrew Brown Jr., a 42-year-old black man killed by sheriff's deputies in Pasquotank County, North Carolina. His family's attorney said that a private autopsy showed that a deputy fired a, quote, kill shot to the back of the head as Brown sat in his car outside his home in Elizabeth City shortly after deputies arrived to serve search and arrest warrants connected to felony drug charges. Attorneys and local officials also called for the release of more body cam video after the family was allowed to see just a 20-second clip on Monday. And it keeps happening. This time, police in Alameda, California, released footage of the events leading to the death of Mario Gonzalez. He's a 26-year-old Latino man who died after officers knelt on his back and shoulder until he became unresponsive. The video contradicts officials' original account of the confrontation. Three officers involved have been placed on administrative leave. President Biden has nominated the sheriff of Harris County, Texas, an outspoken critic of the Trump administration's immigration policies, to be director of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Ed Gonzalez was a Houston police officer for nearly 20 years. He's been the sheriff of one of the nation's most populous and most diverse counties since 2016. He publicly criticized Trump's policies during the former guy's term for focusing on immigrants who did not pose public safety threats. ICE has not had a director confirmed by the Senate since 2017. All right, here's what those of us who are vaccinated have been waiting for. The CDC on Tuesday revised its guidance on coronavirus precautions, saying that those who've been fully vaccinated can safely go without masks when walking, jogging, or cycling outdoors, or when dining with friends and family at outdoor restaurants. The new recommendations apply starting 2 weeks after people receive their final dose of an approved coronavirus vaccine. The change came after rising pressure on public health authorities to relax mask mandates for people who are outside, where social distancing is easier and breezes quickly disperse airborne virus particles. More than 52% of eligible people have received at least one dose. The CDC has released new outdoor mask guidance, saying fully vaccinated people can forego face coverings at small outdoor gatherings or when dining outside with friends from multiple households. Unvaccinated people, according to the CDC, should still wear masks for such events, and even fully vaccinated people should take similar precautions in larger, denser outdoor settings. President Biden touted the new guidelines as a reason all Americans should get vaccinated. Another day, another mass shooting. One woman was killed, and a three-month-old baby was left in serious condition after an unidentified gunman opened fire on a group of children playing in Richmond, Virginia on Tuesday evening. According to the police chief, the shooter opened fire on the group outside an apartment complex before someone else returned fire and the gunman fled. The victims are believed to include the baby and two adult women, one of whom has died. The shooter is still on the run. Police are appealing for information. And I wonder what the president will say about guns in tonight's speech. While the popularity of the United States has improved significantly among several U.S. allies since President Biden entered the White House, this according to a Morning Consult survey released Tuesday, the most dramatic swing took place in Germany. On January 20th, only 24% of Germans viewed the U.S. favorably. 2 months later, that number increased to 46%. Australia, Canada, France, Italy, Japan, Spain, and the UK all saw double-digit jumps as well, while Mexico registered an 8% increase. Among the 14 nations surveyed, only China reported a notable downward trend, though it's possible that would have happened regardless, considering the state of affairs between Washington and Beijing. Biden has made a point of telling other countries, America is back. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.